Okay, so we're going to go through page 60, and then we'll open up the floor for questions. Yeah. Page 60 has a little bit about edema. I think we've probably hit that. Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions on edema? Okay, so our first disorder here is called shock. And I'm not talking about I'm shocked there's a test on Wednesday. It's more than that, right? So it's a loss of blood pressure, and there actually can be a number of things that lead to lack of delivery of oxygen to our cells and tissues. You don't have to know these types of shock, but I thought I would just give you an idea of what some types of shock are. The first one is called hypovolemic on the PowerPoint here. Technically, that means low blood volume. So what are some things that could cause low blood volume?
Hemorrhaging.
Hemorrhaging, right. What else? Not enough blood cells, not enough blood plasma, right? So dehydration, that could also lead to it. So these kinds of things can lead to not enough blood in circulation, and that can lead to a form of shock. Cardiogenic is heart being the problem, so maybe the heart's not pumping blood, maybe there's a heart attack. That could be another issue for shock. I'm sure we've probably all heard of anaphylactic. What does that mean? Allergic reaction, right. So what type of blood cell releases histamine during allergic reactions? Basophils, right. And what do basophils do to our blood vessels? Dilate, right. And what happens to blood pressure when you dilate vessels?
Decreases.
Yes, so blood pressure decreases. There you go. Loss of blood pressure, lack of delivery of oxygen. So, yeah, anaphylactic shock could come from, say, a massive release of histamine from those basophils. Mm-hmm. Vascular shock could be something like a blood vessel rupture, perhaps like an aneurysm. And what is septic shock? Infection, yeah, bacterial toxins can cause changes in pressure, so that too can lead to a loss of pressure. So a lot of different issues here, no matter what is the underlying cause for that shock. How do you feel when how would a person feel who's experiencing shock?
Cold and clammy.
Lightheaded. They even mentioned here loss of consciousness, okay, so certainly somebody who doesn't seem like they're with it would be somebody to check out for things like shock. So eventually we look at having lack of oxygen delivered to those muscles, cells, and tissues. Our next issue is called an aneurysm, and this is a ballooning out of a blood vessel wall. It can often come from a lifetime of high blood pressure that beats up the lining of those arteries and causes them to expand in size. Why do you think arteries are more susceptible to an aneurysm than a vein? Blood pressure. Yes, it's a pressure issue here. So there's all kinds of aneurysms. This is a cerebral aneurysm in the brain. Unfortunately, a person who has one of these may not have much time once it ruptures. You're looking at about 5 minutes before there's not enough blood going to the brain tissue. What they say is if you have the worst headache you have ever had, get it checked. You know, one that no medication, no over-the-counter stuff can fix. There was a man that used to work here, really nice guy, in his 50s, had a brain aneurysm, had a horrible headache over one weekend, died from his aneurysm. Unfortunately, he had stopped and gotten like some BC powder, Goody's powder, kept taking this stuff, and it wasn't doing the job. And the warning sign was that. It was just that he had a really awful headache. So, yeah, unfortunately, these can exist without our knowledge, and as soon as that wall is thin enough or the pressure is high enough, then that vessel ruptures. Why do you think aortic aneurysms are common? High pressure, yeah, right? So the aorta is bigger than your thumb as it comes off the heart. It's bigger than your thumb as it travels through your abdomen, and when it splits off to form your common iliac arteries, it's still pretty big, about the thickness of your thumb in terms of diameter. So, of course, blood pressure can cause changes here. These are different types of aneurysms. The walls can separate from each other. We can see a piece of it balloon out. My dad had stomach ache and vomiting for a couple of days. They took him in and they scanned to see if he had any stomach issues. Well, he didn't have any stomach issues. He just had a bug. And what they found by doing a scan of his digestive organs was an aortic aneurysm that was 3 times the normal size of the aorta. Normal aorta is about this wide. My dad's was about that wide. So they have to either wrap the vessel or actually put you new pipe in, so that way you don't have a blowout, like a tire blowout from where that wall is so weakened. Of course, other issues related to vessels are things like strokes. You've probably seen a number of billboards around this area for strokes. This is a common area, which is unfortunate for strokes being, you know, in our population. Smile, talk, raise both arms, stick out your tongue. Ask somebody to grab your hands, and if they can't grip you with the same strength, one hand's weak, one hand strong, there's another warning sign. So if a part of the face begins to droop, if they're unable to answer you, those are all things that we look for in terms of having a warning sign for stroke. I meant to load this before I came in here. There was a woman that had a stroke in Canada about a year or two ago. She got in her car after having been in the emergency room and been sent home and said, "Watch." And so she got her cell phone out and recorded a selfie video of herself going through minor strokes. She went back into the emergency room and she said, "Look." And so they're like, "Yep, you've had strokes," and they took her that time. But it took convincing them with having a video of herself having a stroke before they would diagnose her with one. That is sad. So this is what happens to your vessels over a lifetime. Early vessel issues involve buildup of plaques and fat. And what happens here is the vessel lining becomes inflamed, and we know that inflammation can cause extra fluid to accumulate in that area. What eventually may happen as the vessel becomes inflamed and accumulates all of this plaque is this piece here can rupture. And when it ruptures, it can float free as a thrombus, now as an embolus, and it can cause a blockage in a vessel, maybe in the brain or in the heart. So ultimately, we do see these kinds of problems coming from blood vessels. Atherosclerosis can lead to arteriosclerosis, which is the end stage of the artery disease. So, you know, that's why we're looking at blood pressure as being a diagnostic tool for things like this hardening of the arteries. So what do you think might be an issue for blood pressure with hardening of the vessels? Blood pressure could go up and not come back down, or blood pressure could drop and not go up. So all sorts of blood pressure regulation issues come when you have hardened vessels that can no longer constrict and dilate upon need. So that's a real issue with having vessels harden over a lifetime. This is an actual aorta. It looks pretty gnarly, doesn't it? So unfortunately, that too can become clogged. It can become damaged, you know, with blood pressure, with plaques and whatnot building up inside. So I did want to mention yet, there's a blank there on your worksheet. Symptoms of a stroke, we did cover that. Just make sure you have an opportunity to write down some things to look for. Did everybody get a chance to do the attendance roster today? I know I passed it during break when you guys were out. You didn't? Not yet. Okay. So I'd like to open the floor up. That should cover all our material for Wednesday. What kinds of topics? Where do you want to start with review?
What's number 6 on that
one? The symptoms? Oh, of a TIA? How long would the symptoms of a TIA last? Maybe a few minutes. They're short-lived symptoms. They're not going to be giving us long-term issues like a stroke would. Sure, just those two volumes? Okay. back and review our EDV and ESV. We know that end diastolic volume and end systolic volume are amounts of blood in the ventricles of the heart. And to be specific, it's the amount of blood in each individual ventricle that we're measuring. So when blood comes into the two atria, the blood drains down through open AV valves, and it trickles down and sits in those two ventricles. We know the SA node fires, that tells the atria to contract, and the atria push blood down into the ventricles. If we stop and measure right now, we would have what's called the end diastolic volume. This is the end period, the ventricles are done with their resting period. Each ventricle holds how much blood? 120, good. The ventricles finally get a message from the AV node telling them to contract. When each ventricle contracts, we pump about 70 milliliters out through the aorta and the pulmonary trunk. That's going to be our stroke volume, which leaves us behind about how much blood in each ventricle? 50, yeah. So the end of systole is the end of contraction for the ventricles. And that means that we're going to be sitting with about 50 milliliters of blood in each ventricle. While we're talking about it, let's also do SV, which is stroke volume. And how would you define stroke volume? The amount of blood ejected from the ventricles. Good. So that's the amount of blood ejected from each ventricle. It's about 70 milliliters, so we can see that 120 minus 50 gives us a stroke volume of about 70. Do you want to talk about anything else related to this topic since we're on it? Since we're kind of in the neighborhood, what is cardiac output dependent upon? Heart rate, yeah. Stroke volume and heart rate. Did not know that was up there. Okay, and one more thing to know. Blood pressure depends on two things. And Puerto Rico, right? Peripheral resistance, yeah. And of those two, which is the number one influence? Cardiac output, good. So just a couple of things to be sure to know for Wednesday. Heart failure and right side heart failure. Let's get a picture of that. Okay, the thing to appreciate about heart failure is the heart muscle in the ventricles fails as a pump. No longer are we looking at an effective set of muscle tissues that can pump out and eject the blood. So when you think about heart failure, the thing that should come to mind is backflow. We're going backwards. If we're looking at left side heart failure, we're going to backflow the blood to the left atrium, backflow the blood to the pulmonary veins. That blood backflows to pulmonary venules, to pulmonary capillaries. Now we're backed up to the lungs. Some of the symptoms of left side heart failure include what? Shortness of breath, can't breathe, fluid around the lungs, so yeah, pulmonary edema, so we've just backflowed the blood back to the lungs from the left ventricle. If you've got right side heart failure, again, it's failed as a pump, it's no longer effective injecting blood, backflow it to the right atrium. Gravity is going to pull that blood down IVC, and so that backs it into veins of the body. And what kinds of symptoms do you see? Swelling, yeah. So edema, peripheral edema, pitting edema where you can leave behind a thumbprint. So the catch with these two sides of heart failure is backflow it to the previous location, and then you get the symptoms to pop out. Okay? And ultimately, if you've got one side failing, the other side has to play catch up for both sides, and eventually both sides fail as a pump. Good questions. How about your next topic?
So the right side backflow to the body.
To the body, that's right.
Can you go over the baroreceptors and chemoreceptors? There was something you told us at the end of the last class. You said one of the basic things to remember was with chemoreceptors, it's a chemical. But you said it better. Could you just go over that?
Yeah, sure can. Talking about blood pressure regulation, and we're talking about a neural control, we're talking about the nervous system being in control, then there's two receptors to look out for. If you're looking for, say, a blood pressure issue, then a baroreceptor is going to pick up on those changes. So baroreceptors detect blood pressure issues, whether it's too high or too low. So if you've got high blood pressure, if you've got low blood pressure, that's the clue you're looking for. You say, that must be something a baroreceptor picks up on. Otherwise, if you're talking about chemical changes in the bloodstream, let's talk about the specific types a chemoreceptor picks up on. The only chemical issues your chemoreceptors can detect are changing levels of oxygen, either too high or too low, or changing levels of CO2, again, too much or too little. And then here's the thing, hydrogen ions influence blood pH. The thing to remember is that the more hydrogens you have, the lower your blood pH, or flip it the other way, too little hydrogen ions means the higher your pH goes. So pH and hydrogen ions are hand in hand. Those are the only three things that your chemoreceptors are looking for. Your chemoreceptors don't give a hoot that you have blood calcium problems, okay? They don't give a hoot that you've got blood sodium issues, blood potassium issues. The only three things your chemoreceptors are looking for are these two blood gases and your pH issues. And so based on that input, the feedback goes to your brain. Your brain says, let's fix this by turning on either sympathetic or parasympathetic control. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you need to hear more than that, or was that just the main clarification?
That's the main thing.
Okay.
I just want to say just gotta keep reading
it
until it clicks.
Right. Because there's so many feedback mechanisms for blood pressure, and this is just one in like seven to eight. Yeah, I can talk. All right, how about your next question? Thank you. Do you have a particular one, or you want me just to pick one at random? Pick one, okay. Okay, so let me toss out at you a problem, and this could be like one of those essays or perhaps a multiple choice question. Let's say that we have a patient who has been vomiting and he has lost hydrogen ions from his bloodstream. All right, so that now tells me he's in alkalosis, and what type of receptor picks up on his problem? Chemoreceptor, right. Because he's in alkalosis, we're gonna take that story and we're gonna expand it out. So far, so good. Okay, let's hit this one from the top. If you've got a person who's been vomiting, this person has lost hydrogens, and I will tell you all of that, and I'll say, okay, if you've lost hydrogens, obviously you've got a case of alkalosis. The receptor that picks up on these kinds of chemistry issues, that's gonna be a chemoreceptor, and the control center is sitting where? Good. It's the cardiovascular center. I'm just going to call it CV center. And based on this information, what is your cardiovascular center going to turn on? Parasympathetic. Good. So is parasympathetic the acetylcholine pathway or epinephrine?
Acetylcholine.
And which cranial nerve?
Vagus
nerve. So I'm just going to make some mental notes. ACH is involved. Vagus nerve. Okay, so here's the catch. The vagus nerve innervates the heart and only the heart. It does not innervate your blood vessels. So when we turn on parasympathetic control to your heart, the vagus nerve releases acetylcholine, and then what happens to your heart rate?
Decreases.
Good. So due to acetylcholine from your vagus nerve, okay, we're going to see the heart rate slow down. There's another part of this, though, because we also want the blood pressure to decrease. Can we use a parasympathetic nervous system to decrease blood pressure? No. So there's no innervation there from the parasympathetic nervous branch. So how do we cause our vessels to dilate? Decrease sympathetic innervation or stimulation to your vessels. In response, vessels dilate. And what happens to blood pressure?
Decreases.
Good. All right, so that's part one. Part two is decrease.
Read the effect there
because
I can't.
Yeah, it's down low, isn't it? Okay, two things. Number one, due to ACH from vagus nerve, heart rate slows. Okay, and second part is decreased sympathetic stimulation. decrease it to both heart and to vessels, but this is where it really makes a difference. If you decrease it to vessels, vessels dilate. Okay, decrease sympathetic stimulation to vessels, vessels dilate, blood pressure decreases. So just to repeat, this is neural control of blood pressure. This is how your brain and your autonomic nervous system provides control. You know, there's other kinds of control. There's histamine that's chemical-based. You know, we talked about hormones. What is another way, hormone-wise, that you could decrease blood pressure? A&P. Yeah, A&P would do it good. Histamine would also decrease blood pressure. That's a chemical control. What is another chemical that decreases blood pressure? Nitrous oxide. Yeah, that stuff at the dentist office. That'll decrease blood pressure. So there's more than just neural control here. Alright, so this is a sample of your essay for the test on Wednesday. If you haven't copied it down, make sure you do copy this one down. Your next topic. Wrapping back in on itself. Crystal. EKG, sure. On there, so you'll want to be able to identify the top four as just name as what they are. Okay. The whole thing, top, bottom, okay. All right, next topic is EKG stuff. Okay, so don't forget, this is a guaranteed question on the test. Yes, it's not bad. What I'm asked to do is sketch out the EKG, give me a P wave, a QRS complex, and a T wave. Don't worry about you don't have to worry about that one. And then just label them as such. So the P wave is the first wave. There's a pretty mighty big QRS wave and then a T wave to follow. What we're going to do here is talk through what each wave represents. And to do that, we're going to tie in the cardiac conduction or intrinsic conduction system. So we know that the SA node has to fire before we see a P wave because the SA node tells what chambers to depolarize?
Atria.
Good. So that P wave is atrial depolarization. Why don't you see atrial contraction? Yeah, it's behind that big QRS wave. Good. So after the P wave, we know that blood is going to be ejected from the atria down to the ventricles, mm-hmm. and the ventricles now receive a message telling them to depolarize. And so the massive wave that follows the AV node firing is this big QRS wave. So QRS represents ventricular depolarization, and it also hides atrial contraction and what else? Yeah, atrial repolarization. All right, and then finally, once the ventricles contract somewhere between S and T, those ventricles relax. So what does T represent?
Repolarization,
good. So ventricles relax, repolarize, and now we're ready to start again. Like I said, don't worry about the U wave. You can draw it if you like, but it's not going to be something you have to for full credit. Okay, is that something you feel like you can do? Draw it, label it, tell what each part does? Okay.
Do you need to label where the SA node fires and the AV node fires?
You don't have to. I'm mainly looking for atrial depolarization, ventricular depolarization, and ventricular repolarization. Tell what each way does. What's your next topic?
Oh, so we can just put the QRS right there in the middle?
Yeah, just slap across the big spikes.
Okay, got
yeah. Or you can circle the water makes it look good. How about next topic? Let's hit that since there's been some questions on it. Those EKG abnormalities, they are on page 41. The top four you want to be able to just identify and name. You guys don't have to explain what's wrong with them or anything of that sort. Just be able to spot them, give them a name. That's a multiple choice question.
I wasn't sure if that was
going to
be like,
you know,
draw.
No. Just, I'll have a picture of you, just tell me what it is.
Okay.
How about your next question?
And just know the pathway of the blood.
No, page anywhere. Don't just say SVC is your starting point. Make sure that you catch where it was starting. Because it could be pulmonary trunk, it could be left ventricle.
Oh, you're going to
start. Just a different starting place, yeah. Yeah, write it out and then pick your starting point. The way you know it, yeah. And then rewrite it on the test with that starting point.
Don't look at this.
Because you're going to keep the test, you could do that.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
All right, what's your next topic? See if it's on here. Not that one.
No, the one that's in the quiz.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Those are on there. Like this.
Yes.
And these.
Yes.
Yeah, they're on there.
Okay.
On the test, yeah, there's one of these on here. So, ventricular systole. Yeah.
No.
That's actually, there's neither choices right.
Saying,
yeah, that's atrial systole, you're right. There we go. Now we got a right answer. Yep.
How would it look if it was an A just
took off? If it was atrial diastole, the picture of it, let me let them snap and I'll show you. Okay. So that is atrial diastole. Because the atria are relaxed there.
Ventricular systole and atrial diastole.
Same thing. Yeah. Atrial diastole and ventricular systole are the same. I'll be right back.
I was really just kidding.
It's like when you dump it,
yeah,
goes away.
I got a whole other day to like at work, so it's gonna be like
it's gonna be crazy. Yeah.
Did you say that one more time?
Okay. Atrial systole and ventricular diastole are the atrial systole and ventricular diastole are the same thing. I had to check that because that's weird sounding. Yeah, atrial systole, atria are contracting, and the ventricles are just resting. Those are they're happening at the same time. So atrial systole and ventricular diastole happen simultaneously. And ventricular systole and atrial diastole happen at the same time.
Ventricular
systole ruptures ventricular systole, but it could be atrial diastole. Yeah. I'm not going to mess with you like that on the test. But they technically can be happening simultaneously. Ventricular systole and atrial diastole. That is A, yeah. Basically, yeah. Because I can't put atrial diastole as an option as long as ventricular systole is an option.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah. Sure. That one is also A, yeah.
Okay.
Do y'all have any other questions? Any other topics I can hit for you? What is your sticking point, do you think, for this test?
Chapter
17 with the heart. Yeah, it's got, because it's got that blood pressure stuff in there, yeah. Everybody feel pretty good with 20? Lymphatic system? Okay. Would anybody like to start about 12:45 on Wednesday? Okay, Chris, I'll be down here for you then about 12:45. Okay.
I got an 8
mark
on the test.
Oh, yeah. No empty stomachs on test day, yeah. All right, if I can help you tomorrow, feel free to come see me. I'm down in 5416 at the end of the hallway.